He's our voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Hey, Dr. Brown, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine, thank you. I don't know if you're getting sick of this trend I'm doing with you over the last couple of weeks, but I'm looking at stuff going on all over the globe, and I just find it's like really interesting stuff, and even if it doesn't, you know, quote unquote, pertain to Connecticut specifically. I just find it interesting, you know, what's going on.
Not at all. In fact, I'm impressed.
Oh, thank you so much. You didn't know I was such a worldly traveler, even though I don't leave.
Diseases that are coming up. And yes, no, I'm very impressed and more than happy to discuss the topics.
Cool. I mean, at least it makes it interesting, right? It makes it more interesting than the same three that we go over. So
absolutely.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about this. I was reading an article, you know, you'll kind of make fun of me, but I'm sitting there having a ski break in Vermont, and I'm just going through my news, and I'm reading about the aftermath of the horrific earthquakes in Turkey and Syria.
Right.
And they were focusing specifically on infectious diseases really popping up in the next 2 to 4 weeks. I remember seeing 2 to 4 weeks, and I thought to myself, why then? And what exactly are they seeing? And as I was reading the article, I thought, oh, okay. So I wanted to see if you could kind of weigh in on this a little bit and just share with people, when a natural disaster like an earthquake occurs, you know, why would that lead to concerns over infectious diseases?
Absolutely. It really is a great question. And this is in itself a lecture, a several hour lecture, but I'll try to.
We've got 15 minutes. Let's see how we do.
I can put it down. But no, you know what? It just goes to show you, I think we'll start off with, I guess it just goes to show you sort of how important the infrastructure we have in any of the cities, towns, communities that we live in. If there's a disruption in that infrastructure, it can lead to significant infections. So just to mention a few is that what you imagine the first and most obvious thing is that the sewer systems fail.
Mm.
You no longer have. So that means you have backup or lack of clean running water. And having lack of clean running water, and because there's so many people that are there, then you're going to get infected. The bacteria alone from that pooling and lack of sanitation leads to some significant common infections, so common bacterial infections, things that are commonly found in the GI tract. And again, don't mean to be gross, but common in the GI tract. The other piece is that then we start getting the uncommon, you know, the temperatures, the stagnant water. We end up, and a lot of it has to do with water. You'll end up getting things like things that you don't typically hear about. You know, you hear about sort of in the olden time stories, you know, things like cholera.
Mm.
That is something that does significantly occur. And then there's some viruses like hepatitis A, which is vaccine preventable, but not a lot of people actually get the vaccine. But if there's stagnant water, that actually can, you know, in just a small amount. Typhus, those are the waterborne. Now, if you're in war-torn areas or areas where, again, poor sanitation, where you can't clean, you can't wash up, you can't, you know, have proper sanitation from that standpoint, then you got to start thinking about louse-borne illnesses, and those transmit a whole cadre of diseases, including things like scrub typhus and epidemic typhus. Those are all related to that aspect of not being able to get, I would say a lot of it is related to just not getting clean running water, either to bathe in or to get rid of any of the sanitary issues.
So actually, while you talk about that, I am curious, we'll jump back to America really fast before we go back to the earthquake. What do you think about Ohio in the train derailment and the water there and the fact that people are like, I'm not touching that water. I don't care what our standards are. There's no way I'm touching that water. And when like 3,000 fish have died and all that, you know what I mean? Like if you lived there, Dr. Brown, would you touch the water? I wouldn't. I'm gonna be real. I'll tell you, I'm not gonna.
Probably not.
Yeah.
You know, that would be a lot of bottled, filtered.
Right, boiling that water.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pieces that are there. But yes, I mean, listen, and I think that also comes with it. I mean, we, you know, if you think about 100 years ago or 100 years plus, probably longer now, 150 years ago, you know, you can go out to the river and, you know, get your water and do what needs to be done, right? Now, nobody will go out and drink in the, in a Housatonic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true. And it's so true. So we're talking this morning to Dr. Brown about these disasters that, you know, a lot of times are out of our control. Even the derailment, I know that's a human error, essentially, but, you know, like the town had nothing to do with that. They certainly didn't see that coming.
Sure.
But, you know, looking at, again, the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria, you know, waterborne diseases, obviously a big issue. Why would food be an issue? Does that connect as well to the water, or is it that
it usually has to do with contamination?
Contamination, got it.
Yeah, because again, you're going to contaminate it. Probably, I mean, it does have food. I mean, obviously, if things spoil, that's always a problem. If you're using older things that have been, you know, so if you move to the aspect of canned food, you know, a lot of people sometimes have canned or self-canned food, especially in countries like that, you know, self-canned food are at risk of, again, it's something that you've probably heard about, but have never seen, botulism.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So that
remind people what that is if they've never heard of it.
Yeah. Botulism is caused by a bacteria, tetanus botulinum, and it is caused. So what it does is it actually gets. It's an anaerobic bacteria, so it only grows in areas that there's no air. So when you're doing home canning, certain types of honey, what will happen is that it overgrows into those things. And then when you eat it, swallow it, come in contact with it, it actually causes the toxin is released. And then when you get it, you actually ingest that toxin, and you get what's called flaccid paralysis.
Dr. Brown is here. We're talking about the aftermath of the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria and how infectious diseases are now expected to be a real concern over the next couple of weeks while the cleanup continues. Another thing, respiratory infections were talked about, Dr. Brown. I would imagine that has to do with like the rubble, right? The aftermath of everything that was destroyed, or am I missing it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's, as I said, there's always some concerns. And again, I think closer together, not the same sort of typical disconnections that we have, you know, or I guess organization, you know, you're having more people that are clustered together. It makes it a lot easier to spread those types of infection. So, and then if you're of bad health, you're not eating appropriately, you can imagine that your health gets poor. That makes you more susceptible for viral infections, including respiratory viruses. And then inhaling dust causes some irritation of your lungs, and that in itself doesn't cause an infection, but what that does is it does cause a decrease in your immune system, and then you can get bacteria or viruses trapped in there, and then you could develop an infection.
I mean, Dr. Brown, the other question I have with this is, okay, so we understand where these infectious diseases can easily pop up for not even just the people who are living in that direct town or city that's been impacted, but the surrounding ones, because there's always a trickle-down effect. And it's not like the waterways, for example, are only going to impact one town. A lot of times they could connect to surrounding ones. What do you do in this situation where you now are like overrun? I would think the hospitals anywhere close by, they're going to be overrun just with trauma patients, let alone, I would think, an uptick in infectious disease patients, right? I mean, what do you do? How do you stay on top of it?
Yeah, so typically what happens is that so first of all, the initial disaster is, you know, mass casualty. So you spend a period of time basically triaging people, the sickest first, to try to get them fixed and moving on, and then dealing with the aftermath of the infections. This is where we get a lot of pop-up clinics, and you know, Doctors Without Borders are usually right on the cusp of these, and they're the first ones to deploy. You usually have some military service that's there, and then the Red Cross. And really, it's managing people instead of going to the clinic or the hospital. It's really managing them under tents.
But I'm glad that you paint that picture. And the reason I brought that up is exactly for that. When you have these nonprofits who are saying, we're going to go to this country, we're going to go here, we're going to do pop-ups. A lot of times we will hearing in the United States, you know, why are we going to other countries to help? And you know, when we have our own problems here, and we do. But like you just gave us such a snapshot of why there is such a need for these organizations to go to other countries. I mean, think about when you know thousands of people at a clip were absolutely, they were sleeping, thank God, but were destroyed in that earthquake.
Right.
And when you know that there are so many thousands of people who have their lives upside down and now are going to start getting sick from the aftermath, it's like, where do they go? Unless
right.
you want to see mass casualty, they have to go somewhere.
Exactly. And you know, even throwing more in that, Melissa, is that we've become we're a global community. I mean, it's not the same, you know, mm-hmm. 50 years ago, 100 years ago, even 20 years ago. I mean, just think about it. We're just coming out of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
I mean, when you have a disaster like this and you have unsanitary conditions and we talked about humans, but we also have animals that are in the street. We have, you know, they're trying to modify and make, survive. And as you try to survive, you're not going to take that same sort of sanitary precautions. And because there's so many humans on this planet, the likelihood that they're going to get a mutation in a virus isn't that low. I mean, mm-hmm. it's definitely possible. So when we do talk about this, I mean, this could be a site of a future infection that travels around the world.
Yeah.
So it is important for us to at least be aware of that and provide the support that we can. And obviously, we need to support sort of our community, our state and our country, but we can't forget about the rest of the world.
It's such a great point, Dr. Brown, when you think about even just COVID that, you know, mm-hmm. I'm sure when it was first, I even remember those early meetings when I was sitting here with my colleagues and it was like, how much do we talk about this COVID thing before it came to the U.S. or before we knew it was in the U.S.? And I remember sitting there going, yeah, but like, it's airborne. Can it travel here? Like, we have business people. Don't you think it would ever come here? And, you know, I don't know that. Why don't we just weigh it out and see what happens? And here we are where
yeah.
it was here full blown. And it's still here and we're never going to get rid
yeah.
of it. So,
I mean, last week we talked about Marburg virus.
Right.
I mean, that's a little small paragraph in infectious disease book.
Yeah.
But now we're talking about it. So
yeah, or like, what about the one that was out in the desert that we were talking about? That we're like, oh, by the year 20, whatever, it's going to be up in Canada. Remember, we were talking
yeah,
about that
yeah,
a couple,
yeah,
couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
I'm telling
you, mycoses.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. I know. See, that's why we're just going to keep traveling, Dr. Brown.
I know it was tip of your tongue, Melissa.
You knew. You know. I'm just wrapping up my degree in infectious disease. I'm almost there, but not quite at your level. But I'm just
mycoses, blastomycoses. You know, you got them all. You got all the fungal.
Exactly.
All the fungal infections.
You ever done that thing, Dr. Brown, where you sit in front of somebody else and they just like, you know, tap your back and you're their marionette and you just move your mouth and they talk for you? That's going to be you and me. Whenever we go out on the road and do a show, I'll sit in front of you. I'll move my mouth and you just say all the big words, okay?
Sounds good.
Make me look smarter. No, I love it. Dr. Brown, I love this direction that we're taking your segment in, going around the world, seeing what's happening. I just think it's really insightful. I'm learning an awful lot, so thank you.
Yeah, my pleasure.
All right, we will talk next week. We'll see where we land on the map next week with Dr. Brown. And, of course, if you have a topic that's on your mind, please feel free to reach out and share it with us. 203-333-9422 is the number, or you can always email me directly, Melissa at WICC600.com. That's Melissa with one L and two S's.